Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. For today's podcast, we're going to be looking at a number of UK equities, as well as discussing the key themes in markets. And to do that, we're joined kindly once more by Alan Green. Alan, thank you very much for being with us this morning.
Good morning, John. Good to be back on this rainy day.
It is. It is. We've certainly seen a turn in the weather in recent days. And I mean, that's really been reflected in markets, Alan, really taking a turn yesterday in global equities. A huge sell-off we saw over in the United States yesterday was the worst sell-off since 2020. And you know, those first months after COVID started to spread throughout the globe. So looking at the Dow Jones, down about 1,200 points, about 4%, and about 4% given up on the S&P 500 as well yesterday, Alan. So huge moves. And this is all down to what's been, you know, the driver of market moves so far this year, and that's inflation. We saw this morning, UK inflation 9.9%, easing down from the double digit reading that we saw in the month prior, although still running very, very hot. Really looking at the figures there, it's down to lower fuel costs. But the move that we saw yesterday was down to US inflation. Now, they actually had a reduction. It was 8.5% CPI on the prior month. When we got the data yesterday, it had reduced to 8.3. But the big thing here was it was above analyst estimates of 8.1%. So over the past month, markets have been pricing in a reduction down to 8.1%. We got that surprise on the upside of 8.3% year on year. Month on month, we saw prices excluding food and fuel rise 0.6%. So that's obviously the services market there really shooting up. And that's what unnerved markets. I mean, anybody looking at a chart of yesterday, we did see the S&P 500, the Dow Jones give up, and also the NASDAQ, you know, 2% within seconds, very, very quickly. And that's really, Alan, people moving their expectations of when the Fed's going to pivot down the line at some point. But when you're sort of looking at these markets, how much do you feel? Yes, we saw a knee-jerk reaction yesterday. Looking at futures here, you know, we're not seeing as much of a violent response today. I mean, how much do you think that move and the stabilization here today is just simply the market resetting themselves and thinking, well, okay, we're going to be looking for a pivot. It could have been sooner rather than later if we saw a lower figure. But you know, given what the Fed is doing, and to some extent the Bank of England, they're managing a recession at which they can turn off at any point. As soon as we go into a recession, as soon as we see prices fall back, they can then pivot. And the market looks at that and think, okay, maybe we're going to see a bit of weakness out there in the economy, but you know, this isn't something that isn't controllable. And just thinking, okay, any dip at this point is something that's worth buying.
Yeah, well, I think it is that, John. I mean, if you look at the drivers for the falls yesterday, as you say, the NASDAQ came off almost immediately as soon as it opened. But I mean, you've got all of the leading tech stocks really plummeting. I mean, Facebook, Meta down 9%, chip maker Nvidia down 9%, Amazon off 7%, you know, Apple plummeting also. And all the tech stocks, of course, their future earnings are extremely, or the valuations there are reflected in the market are based on future earnings, which are very racy. So any rise in interest rates immediately impacts on that. So the prospect of this rise, I think, just put investors into tailspin. So it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. But I do just think it's a correction. And I think today you'll see a lot of people buying that correction. And, you know, certainly a return, not a bounce back to where it was. But I think we'll certainly see the markets certainly stabilize and recover somewhat. But of course, there's an awful lot of uncertainty around. You know, there's so many factors. We're trying to keep inflation under control. We've got the winter of discontent looming ahead of us. And of course, all of the ramifications, concerns over whether the measures to cap energy bills are sufficient. Of course, the EU have just announced this morning that they've launched a package of energy price caps, and they've been absolutely resolute in what they said, that their solidarity with Kiev and Ukraine would be unshakable, and they would stand firm against Russia and you know, not be kowtowed by Putin's moves to shut off gas supplies. So laudable indeed. But of course, how that will pan out, we're still trying to work out at the moment. In the UK, of course, Liz Truss, the new PM, has announced a range of measures to cap energy bills. Will they be enough? It certainly means that we won't see the stratospheric price increases that were predicted even a few weeks ago. So the price cap in the UK will work in that regard. But there's still an awful lot of uncertainty. Underneath, you know, companies are still earning good money. You know, they're delivering on earnings, they're delivering returns. The markets are still pretty healthy. It is isolated, really, to this issue around energy.
It is. And I mean, just looking at these figures here, Alan, I mean, UK 9.9%, the US 8.3%. They're two figures that were lower than the previous months in terms of inflation. So
yeah,
inflation is falling. Fuel prices are falling. What people are paying for pumps is falling. And, you know, we were seeing inflation figures, you know, coming out sort of 18%, I think, was from an investment bank. You know, that was taken into consideration that we continue to see higher energy costs for households. But if you have a price cap coming in, you know, that doesn't play out. You don't see those 18% rises. Of course, you know, there's different factors at play here. Of course, there's food prices that may start to play out in markets. If you look at the soft commodities there, if we see a continued conflict in Ukraine, which prevents exports of grain, that will follow through and we'll see food. But the fuel's the big one here, and we're starting to see measures which are going to bring that down. So, you know, from the fiscal side, it looks as though, you know, there are measures being taken to bring inflation under control. You know, from the monetary policy side, we're seeing interest rate hikes. You know, we've seen the ECB start to hike now. Of course, the Bank of England and the Federal Reserve have been doing it for some time. So that, you know, there's real measures being put in place to bring this down. We'll probably see a recession. You know, it will probably be a shallow one. And that's something that the market knows. And just looking at what's happening out there this morning, Alan, you know, people are buying into that move.
Looking at futures. Indeed, they're buying into it. I think the futures are good. I mean, one other factor that that's also worth mentioning too, of course, we've got Putin and Xi of China, who's leaving China for the first time in 2 years to meet in Kazakhstan at the SCO meeting, which is the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. And this is a meeting of the ex-Soviet Central Asian nations, who were trying to sort of put out a collective economic powerhouse, if you like, to the West, to G7 and all the rest of it. And of course, I think with the background tension in Taiwan, of course, the ongoing war in Ukraine, even though the media tell us that Ukraine had the upper hand at the moment, of course, that is the problem, isn't it? You know, I think the shock and horror of the invasion earlier this year has now receded. We're now aware it's going on, but you've got wall-to-wall coverage of the Queen's funeral at the moment. And of course, it's very hard to form an assessment of that. But I think that's another factor. So, you know, markets are certainly looking for some certainty from China and also some certainty from Ukraine too in regard to its position with Russia.
Indeed. And I mean, looking at the advances that Ukraine have made in, you know, in recent days, really over the last week, it's been incredible. And, you know, that does sort of raise the question that, you know, when do we start to see peace talks? Of course, they're saying at the moment they're not on the table, but, you know, as soon as you know, you start to see Ukraine stopping pushing Russia back, and we see a stalemate possibly around the winter. You know, there could be talks around there, or, you know, talks of talks to some extent, and that will only be seen as a positive by markets.
Yeah.
So something to keep an eye on there. But Alan, now let's move on to the equities that we're going to discuss today. First up is a company that's really heavily linked to what we've just been speaking about in terms of inflation and interest rates in Redrow, the house builder. Looking at shares ticking up nicely on the day, and that's on the back of, you know, pretty positive full year results, Alan. So what do they look like?
It's a fantastic set of results, John. And also, I think, you know, there we've got all this background buoyancy in the housing markets. We've seen the major housing companies' reports. You and I have discussed, of course, Barclay Group and Persimmon in recent weeks, and they're all pretty well telling the same story. But I mean, you've got a 10% increase in revenue to 2.1 billion, which is back to pre-COVID levels. Underlying PBT, profit before tax, 31% to 410 million, you know, again, pre-COVID levels. And order book of 1.4 billion, you know, so it's a really, you know, going forward, it's a very strong order book. And, you know, there's also a lot of confidence in the board as well, I think, being signaled in the housing market, and of course in the confidence in the future performance of the company. We had a director buy £100,000 worth of shares back in July in the run up to, or in the pre-close period, and of course we had the a 100 million share buyback launch as well, which is also going to be supportive for the share price. But, you know, we've said it before, I mean, house prices just seem to be evergreen in the UK. We're a finite land mass. Of course, we're an island, so that's always going to be supportive of housing prices. And we have a huge burgeoning population, so there will always be demand. Now, of course, if you know, we've isolated the reasons for inflation and you know, the recessionary pressures, but if the recessionary pressures do widen and it becomes a widespread recession, then we could be looking at a completely different picture. So there is always that in the background. But I think, you know, if you're investing into the markets, and if you're looking for a company that's going, or companies that are going to continue to deliver growth, you've got to take a look at companies like Redrow and Persimmon. I mean, the shares are up this morning, as you said, at 1%, but they're still, you know, just off year lows at 450p, and we've got a year high of getting on the £7.50 a share, and a dividend yield, of course, of 5%. And I know some of the other house builders, I think Persimmon, have a much higher yield than that. But they're certainly, given the directed buyers back in July, the outlook, of course, you know, is still very positive from the group. The chief exec was very positive in echoing his comments looking forward. But of course, it only goes so far. And of course, there are other factors beyond which, you know, the board and, you know, Richard Akers, of course, the non-exec chairman there, have no control over. And certainly they're very sort of positive in regard to total land holdings. You know, the plots are now up to 67,500 plots, compared with just over 60,000 at the end of 2019. Along with the share buyback, they've also increased the dividend too. So it's well, you know, we're seeing the same sound bites across all of the reports from the major house builders, but I think they're confident that pretty well whatever's thrown at them in the coming weeks and months, they can deal with. You know, well placed to deliver another strong set of results, quote unquote.
Yes, Alan. I mean, I think what you say there, weeks and months, really brings in this concept of time horizon when you're investing and looking at certain companies. The companies like Redrow, Barratt, Persimmon, if you're looking at the share prices, for me, they've largely priced in any slowdown in the housing market, which we've not yet seen, which we're likely to see over the weeks and months. There could be some further downside, but I think a lot of it's already priced in. But if you're looking beyond weeks and months into years, you know, those factors that you mentioned there in terms of the dynamics of the UK housing market does suggest over time that we see higher housing prices and we see continued demand for housing. So, you know, yes, there may be more downsides in these shares in the weeks and months, but I think if you're looking at on a longer time horizon over years, certainly a sector to be looking at. And given those results from Redrow and what they're doing, as well as the shift out of London, which is quite interesting to see in their strategy, which is starting to play out, maybe one of the house builders to consider there. So I'm sure, just looking here, I think we've covered all of the house builders for this round of earnings. So I think we're going to have to wait a few months to get further insights. But of course, that'll be something we'll be covering on the podcast when we get it. So now let's move on, Alan, to a company that in the past we've had myself and you have had, you know, differing views on in Bidstack. I did say at one point that I think, you know, it was getting to that point where they really needed to start recording some revenue, or they were going to be in trouble and maybe miss the opportunity in in-game native advertising. But they, you know, looking at the figures, they seem to have done that. So, you know, they might with the argument that they could be generating more in revenue, but it's 2 million for the first year, Alan. But what do their recent updates look like?
Well, it's good progress, and I think you know, as you say, John, we spoke about Bidstack in the past, and I know there are a number of players in the private sector that have also had equally good offerings, and I know you felt that they could eclipse Bidstack in its efforts to become the de facto go-to in-game advertising platform. But it does seem that Bidstack have, you know, shrugged off the competition and have made that progress, and that's been reflected now in the revenues. And of course, we, you know, there was a big deal sort of put in place late last year with a leading AAA publisher, which really cemented the group's position. And I think, you know, all the way through, we've been looking for signs of confidence. So when the big players in the market start to engage with Bidstack, then you know that, you know, most of the issues are being ironed out. And certainly the past 4 or 5 years has been a series of steps forward by Bidstack to establish the platform, establish an ROI a platform, and all that advertisers can look at and assess and gain a proper understanding of the value for money that they're getting from that. And indeed, we'll discuss numbers in a second, but at the end of August, a few weeks ago, Bidstack announced it had been in collaboration with the IAB, the Internet Advertising Bureau. And effectively, what that's done, it's actually brought Bidstack's own standards into the industry as the blueprint for in-game advertising. And that's a huge endorsement, really, of Bidstack's technology and also its position in the sector. And then we come on to, you know, looking throughout the year, we've seen new contracts with other providers. August 17th, a contract extension with Sports Interactive. That's the second one. So they've expanded that. We're seeing good revenues coming from the joint venture with Azerion. And then, as you said, John, two million for the year. The interims to 30th of June, we saw revenues of 2 million on the half year. Margin increased to nearly 40% from 34%. Cash at the end of year of 3.7 million. And certainly, certainly the position going forward, it's expanding its global media presence with an agency, MMP, who's connected with more and more global media partners. And also, a few months ago, the company announced it had appointed new chairman designate David Reeves, who's an industry veteran, ex-Sony PlayStation, Capcom, and he's a non-exec director at Keywords previously, and also engaged with a number of IT and software companies. So very good profile within the industry. And I think, you know, we can say the company's got a market cap of 33 million. Shares are a little off that year high of 5.9p, but at 3.5p, I think now, you know, the company's showing that it's growing revenues, and it's showing that it's now got the credibility and the gravitas within the industry to really ramp up this offering. And, you know, as we've said before, you know, we could see very quickly that these revenues start to multiply and start to reflect the market that Bidstack is operating in.
Indeed. I was just looking at, you know, some stats before we recorded, and you know, there's a study by Dentsu which looks at global advertising spend, and it's predicted for 2022 to be about $738 billion. And if you look at Bidstack, 2 million, if they double that in the second half, say 6 million revenue for the year, you know, there's a question to be answered here whether, you know, there's, you know, a larger in-game advertising market out there which Bidstack aren't taking hold of, or is it a market that's still in its infancy and we're expecting more from it in the future? And that's probably a question that we're going to be answering, Alan, on future podcasts when we get further updates from Bidstack.
Sure, there was just coming. There was some historical data. I think the global marketplace for in-game advertising was $150 billion in 2019. It's growing at 13% per annum, reckoned to be $260 billion by 2025. So at the moment, Bidstack's got a very small percentage of that. But given that it's jumped through the hoops and it's got the traction now with the IAB, you know, I think it's got to deliver from here on in. So I think we have to reasonably expect now multiplying revenues every year, and then obviously moves to profitability, and then of course it'll multiply from there.
Indeed, and looking at shares, you know, trading at their market cap roughly, I mean, if we were optimistic and said they doubled their revenues in the second half, trading at 5x sales, you know, at current levels, I think that's fairly well valued for this point in time. Of course, all to see in terms of, you know, the future revenues, and you know, if they're able to really push on from there, that would certainly start to look very cheap for Bidstack. So, Alan, let's now move on to clean tech lithium. We welcomed Dr. Aldo Boitano, the CEO of Cleantech Lithium, to the podcast a few weeks ago to discuss their upcoming results or potential results coming from their Chilean lithium assets. I mean, we saw those yesterday, Alan. So what did they look like?
It's a very strong set of results, John. Of course, you know, if like me, you know, in the area we work in, John, we are seeing a lot of advertising from various companies and receiving emails through from various parties, and there's been a plethora or a huge increase that I've seen this year in ads for EVs, you know, switching over from your existing vehicle to EVs, and a raft of deals out there in the market making it very attractive. And it just signifies really the absolute burgeoning growth in the EV industry. And that's, of course, before you get to other applications for lithium, such as the clean tech, clean energy tech and all the rest of it. But I mean, it's just brought home the importance of companies engaged in seeking out battery metals, and of course clean tech lithium is right there in the eye of the needle, as it were. Market cap currently 42 million and shares trading just off that year high of 63p, currently 54p. That's up from a year low of just under 20p. And of course the growth is all based on the upgrade to the project in Chile. The company operates two key lithium projects in Chile. That's the Laguna Verde and Francisco Basin, located in the Lithium Triangle. And of course, this is the South America Cone Lithium Triangle, which many companies are operating in. Of course, there's already good infrastructure in place to help companies further discover and further get the stuff out of the ground, as it were, and a great network of renewable power sources too. So whilst it has these two projects, there are another 120 odd licenses applied for at Lamara, which is a low low-cost greenfield project to help it further development. And what Cleantech is using, it's using renewable power to reduce the environmental impact of getting the lithium out of the ground by using this direct lithium extraction technique that it removes the lithium from brine but ultimately gives a better rate of recovery and a purer product at the end of it. But the big news really that's helped drive the growth in the share price is the resource upgrade to the Laguna Verde project, which is a 22% increase to 1.51 million tons of lithium carbonate at a grade of 206 milligrams per liter, which is hugely substantial. It's a big step forward for the group. And of course, as you said, John, you spoke with Aldo Boitano, the chief exec, and where it is, the resource estimates now gives the group the basis for a PFS, a pre-feasibility study, and the base case production rate is 20,000 tons of lithium carbon extract per annum, which will be produced from using renewable energy from the region, and that ultimately providing green lithium directly to the EV industry. And as I say, you know, when I look at companies like this, I'm mindful of this raft of advertising and offers now coming out to get people out of their internal combustion engine cars into EVs. And it's companies like Cleantech Lithium, I think, are very much at the forefront and have a great opportunity in the next few years.
Indeed. I mean, seeing some of the recent figures on EVs, it's you know, even in a time when we're starting to see softer economic conditions, we're starting to see growth in that market accelerate. So, you know, there's lots of different forecasts out there, but around that sort of that period of 2030 is a particular crunch point, and companies like Cleantech Lithium are well placed to plug that demand gap in lithium and other battery metals. So one to keep an eye on. And also, if listeners are interested in hearing a little bit more from Cleantech Lithium, do check out our events page, because they'll be presenting at the upcoming UK Investor Magazine virtual investor conference on the 27th of September. So do check that out, and you can hear more from Aldo then. So Alan, the last company that we're going to discuss today is an Aquis listed stock. Looking at its recent raft of news, they've got a lot going on. It's an investment company focused on mining, by the looks of things here. It's Evrima, not one that we've discussed on the podcast previously. So would you have to give us a bit of an intro to them and you know, try and dissect some of these updates that we've seen?
Okay, so this Evrima PLC, EVA is their IPO code, as you rightly say, John. They're an Aquis listed company, and the company has a market capitalization of just over a million currently, having traded as high as 4.2p on the year, but it's currently just below that at the moment. So often with investment companies, I think they do tend to trade at a discount because, of course, there's no direct influence over the projects. But Evrima is, I believe, fundamentally different in that regard. And there are two, well, before we get into the third investment, there are three primary investments. I'm going to discuss the two first of all. The first one will be very familiar to listeners that know Power Metal Resources, in that Evrima own an 8.9% stake through Kalahari Key Minerals in the Malopo Farms project in Botswana. And of course, the Malopo Farms project in Botswana holds or has identified, through drilling that was announced at the end of August, they've identified a huge anomaly under the ground that they believe contains a massive sulfides body, and the drilling that they undertook, the first drill hole went into the ground and came out with nickel sulfide, which indicated straight away that they'd tapped into the edge of this huge body. So what that did for Power Metal, it took the share price from 0.9p up to as high as 1.67p. So virtually doubling its share price, and of course, in doing so, its market capitalization as well. Now, you would expect a company with a near 9% stake in that same resource would reflect that move also. But the Evrima share price hasn't moved at all. And that first, when I looked at this company first of all, I thought, well, that's not right. Hang on, how come it hasn't moved? Power Metal hold 87.71% of the Malopo Farms project, and Kalahari Key Minerals, or Evrima through Kalahari Key Minerals, hold 8.93%. So there should have been a movement there, so it hasn't. So therefore, it is undervalued on that point. Number two, it has a stake in a company called Premium Nickel Resources, which is a TSX-listed company, and PNRL is the EPIC code, Premium Nickel Resources has just completed an RTO with North American Nickel. It's come out to market with a valuation of $250 million. Now, Evrima holds 1,114,115 shares, trading at $1.90 after a recent high of $2.60, giving it a stake which is worth in sterling terms 1,398,000. Again, no reflection at all of that valuation in the share price. So you add Kalahari Key Minerals, the 8.93% of the Malopo Farms project, and that together, and you've got a valuation there which is worth many times or many multiples where we are now. With Premium Nickel Resources, the company also has 12,500 warrants too, which is also worth noting. Now, yesterday, the company announced that Premium Nickel Resources had also set up an international metals group called Premium Nickel Resources International Metals Group, PNR International Metals. Now, the Evrima chairman is a fellow called Simon Grant Rennick, who is well known from the Camborne School of Mines. Many years in public and private company operations. He's a non-exec director at UK SPAC PLC, iGrain and AAA Capital, and has been involved with at board level with a number of mining companies over the years. So the Evrima chairman, Simon Grant Rennick, will be managing director of this new company, Premium Nickel Resources International Metals Group. That company will develop relations with end consumers, EV manufacturers, in regard to the sale of nickel, copper, cobalt, and platinum group metals, which the group will produce. So straight away there, as opposed to being a mining investment company, we've got a member of the board now who's actively driving growth in the business, which is hugely important. So we then come to the third asset with the group. I should mention before I move on to that Premium Nickel they 100% own the Celebi mine in Botswana. It's got assets in other countries too, but Celebi covers 11,500 hectares in Botswana. There are two existing mine shafts there. Historical production was stopped in 2016 after a failure at the processing plant. And Premium Nickel are now bringing that mine back on stream. Historical mineral estimates of 7.8 million tons at 0.87% nickel and a copper grading as well, which equates calculated back to 155,000 tons of nickel and 253,000 tons of copper. So again, we've got that key connection with Botswana. The third company is Eastport Ventures, which is a private Canadian mining company, which has five further assets in Botswana. It has a nickel and copper project called the Celebi Nickel Copper Project, which is south, which is adjacent to the mine area that I've just outlined, run by Premium Nickel Resources. Also has the Matsitsama Copper Project, the Keng Nickel Copper Project, Foley Uranium Project, and also the Juaneng Diamond Project. So a raft of assets there. Ivrima holds 6.83% in eSport, and with warrants that it also holds, which expire in June 2027, if those warrants are exercised, Ivrima will hold up to 10% of the company. So I said right at the start, mining investment companies often don't get the good press they're entitled to, but I think you can look at eSport in detail and see value there. But the first two investments, Kalahari Key Minerals and Premium Nickel Resources, alone should propel the market capitalization to many times where it is now.
And just as a recap there, what was the discount currently that you had on this, looking at the share price and the underlying assets? Obviously, some of them are private and difficult to value, but you know, sort of looking at recent estimates, what does that discount look like?
Okay, so if we just take the Premium Nickel Resources stake on a standalone basis, that's currently worth $1,398,000. Okay, the market cap is currently 1.05 million. So that stake alone outstrips the current market cap. We then have the 9% stake in the Malope Farmers project. Okay, now the valuation of Power Metal Resources went from something like 14 million up to 25 million. So that movement was solely on the back of the find at Malope Farms. So, you know, given if Rima had shares had risen in a proportionate way, then it should certainly have doubled its valuation on that alone. So you see where I'm coming from here. I think we're trading currently, forgetting eSport, forgetting any of that, I think we're trading at about a quarter of where the market capitalization should be.
Yes. I think you've highlighted there a deep discount in those shares. So obviously, yeah, you know, one for the more adventurous investor, but you know, for those that are like digging down into different mining projects there, I think there's a task to have a look and look for yourself and reconfirm what Alan just outlined there, that there's what looks to be quite a significant discount. So, you know, as I said, one that we've touched on the podcast for the first time, but I'm sure one that we will pick up on in the future. Alan, thank you much for being on the podcast today.
Thank you, John.
So just as a note to listeners, as I mentioned, we have the UK Investor Magazine virtual conference coming up on the 27th of September, and Cleantech Lithium that we discussed on the podcast today will be presenting. So we'll put a link into the notes of these podcasts so you'll be able to get yourself signed up for that. Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.